Do the trashy pulp novels of the world have anything to offer? Are bestsellers all they're cracked up to be? Here at Terrible Book Club, we explore whether you really can judge a book by its cover or its ridiculous synopsis. You ever passed a book and thought, ugh, who's reading this? We probably are. Hello and welcome to episode 190 of the Terrible Book Club. I'm Chris, and this is Paris.
Hello.
This time, we bring you Taurus 4 by Rena Vale at the request of our longstanding patron, Beast with the Least. This book was published in 1970, and it has the art to prove it. We will show it to you on social media, but for those that refuse to look at things with their eyes, it's like... There's the backside of a dude who's in sort of like leather straps. You can see his ass pretty
He's
good.
He's just in a bondage harness.
Yeah.
He's just in a bondage harness.
By the way, Paris, that never happens in the book. Like, there's no bondage harness in the book that the... Okay,
no.
Great. Just wanted to make sure I didn't skim over that. And then there's like a nude lady like being drawn up into a flower kind of.
Good memory. Yeah, yeah. And... Of course, we've obscured all the nudity very tastefully. So bondage spaceman. So again, bondage harness, that's it. No other clothing. And then a space helmet that looks like a terrarium. So that's what we're working with. And he has his arm extended right over her vagina to cover that. And he's holding the flower, which he's being drawn up into. And she is covering her breasts with her arms. You know, 1970. The characters also, like the woman especially, looks much older than the character in the book, who is like 15, 14?
Yes.
15, I think. And she has curly hair, which the character in the book does not. So just weird vibes overall with the cover. Like, I don't know what notes they gave the cover artist, but actually, yeah, who drew this? This is a good question.
I feel like no fantasy or sci-fi book cover ever really shows anything the way I imagine it when I'm reading it. I don't know if you feel the same way or not, Paris.
A lot of it is absolutely bizarre.
I'm always looking at it like, who is this dude supposed to be? Is that one guy with the long hair? I guess this guy also has long hair, but I thought it was a different color. Also, that's not at all how I imagine the armor.
Hey, you know what? Something I love about these old fantasy paperbacks is at the very end, it's like, oh, this author also wrote this. And then after that, it's like, oh, well, if you're a fan of this, maybe you'll like this. And this one says, if you like Taurus 4, you will also enjoy Sex Max by Hughes Cooper. Who will win, love or the computer, when the two clash in a utopian society? The computer was jolted when Emma Beasley fell in love with James, her sex mate. But when young Josie decided she wanted James for herself, well, it almost blew a fuse. In the United States of the future, even the perfect computer could fail when two women are after one man.
Well, that really fails the Bechdel test, don't it?
I mean, I'm confused about the computer being in love with humans.
How many X's is Max spelled with? This is important.
Actually, there's only two. Sex Max. S-E-X-M-A-X.
Nothing. Oh, but like Max isn't like XXX at the end. I was fully expecting, wow, some restraints shown by that author.
You know what's funny? Is they're like, hey, you can order these books from us, and the address is Paperback Library, Department B, 315 Park Avenue South, New York, New York. Department B just really gets me. Like, you didn't
that
even name
like
the department.
Government office version of, like, yeah. Like the government repository of shitty sci-fi and fantasy paperbacks. Anyway, thank you, Beast with the Least, for leading us on this journey. If this is your first time listening to this show, what we do here at the Terrible Book Club is read books that we assume will be bad based on their cover, title, summary, or some combination of the three. Sometimes we read books that our patrons, listeners, or friends recommend, like today. So we do the opposite of what most people do in a bookstore or while they're browsing the internet. Usually, this experiment results in a disappointing read, but once in a while, we end up liking the book. Today's show includes our usual barnyard language, plus some body image and weight loss stuff, little light eugenics, heavy colonialism and sexism, racism, and sexual assault. The boys are back in town!
Boys are back in town! Boys are back in town! That's all the lyrics I know from that song. Like 90%
guess
of the
guess who's back in town today? Something, whatever.
And then,
came
of
in
course,
on
his,
with the beard. I know the melody, not the words.
And then throughout this horrible dish, we also have a ribbon of anti-communist sentiment just underneath it all. Underneath it all. Underpinning it all. Without that ribbon, I don't think this book would exist.
I would lean more towards like anti-hippie flavor, which is also hand in hand with anti-communism in a lot of ways. But it seems to be more like those darn hippies, specifically
Chris,
that word.
What if I told you that this author was a critical part of the House Un-American Activities Committee and
what?
Tattletailed on Lucille Ball? And several other notable people during the Red Scare. Yeah. Does that change your thoughts about this book?
It does.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It is absolutely, we are both correct. It is anti-hippie, anti-communism, because those ideas are intrinsically intertwined in this author's mind due to her political leanings, which she only embarked upon for power and recognition. But we'll talk about that later.
Okay, well, that certainly casts a different shadow upon what we read here.
Yeah, do you feel like we're under a little red sun now?
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to read the back of the book summary here for us so that you guys can understand how you were supposed to get pulled in, or, you know, back in the 1970s when you're sifting through some, you know, paperback shelf. Here we go.
Yeah, what did Rita want us to think? Tell us, Chris.
It is the year 2270 AD. A long time ago on Earth, our ancestors did not believe in the industrial warfare society. They dropped out with bong in hand to live in freedom in the rift-filled land and do their thing. Hated by all the uptight squares. Thus begins a folk legend on Taurus IV, where during the Saurian Wars, a group of hippies had been transplanted forcibly. Right now, the only uptight square on the planet is a stranded space sociologist, Dorian Frank, who has reason to be uptight. The group is about to sacrifice a beautiful virgin to the god in charge of their hemp garden. And the planet is about to be colonized by a non-human race even more ruthless than mankind. But all Dorian can do is invent new footnotes to the space manual, like, for his own peace of mind, the space sociologist should sometimes kick the dirty savage on his bare butt.
Hell of a way to end that back of the book summary. Like, damn, if you're trying to repel me from a book, that's how to do it.
I really like that they just do the stupid joke that we do all the time whenever we read sci-fi stuff and you put space and then whatever the occupation of that person is, but they totally straight-faced called him a space sociologist.
Doesn't make any sense. If you don't know that there are any other fucking aliens out there, how could you have a sociologist? And wouldn't, I mean, that's not even probably what we would call them, right?
Yeah,
or
so
I guess
to
an exosociologist?
Yeah, a space sociologist sounds like you're trying to study the sociology of space, of the void between where there is stuff.
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
So
it would be an...
That's explicitly nothing. I would say like xenosociologist, because like xeno
or
is
xeno,
usually
yeah.
the thing. You put like, you know,
right.
You're studying the societies of other worlds. And I think at this point in the book,
yes.
like because of like the Saurian Wars or whatever, like we know aliens are a thing in this universe. So it's conceivable that a space sociologist could be a thing. But again, you probably would be like a xenosociologist or something like that.
Honestly, that's what makes the name even worse, is that if they do know that there's aliens,
yeah, they're just like, I don't know, space sociologist.
And if this is his first time in space, I don't understand how this is his first time in space. How could you be a fucking space sociologist and you're like 35 and this is the first time you went to space?
He really
fucking
didn't
make
know,
any sense.
No field work God, whatsoever when he got his space
Zero.
Degree. Okay, Paris, well, why don't you regale us with the characters and setting and then the summary that I mostly wrote, but I can see that you've done some editing, as you usually do. But yeah, why don't you take it away with
Not those? Much. You just had a name wrong that I had to change like 8 times. That's all.
Who cares about names?
Chris, in Chris's defense, Chris was incredibly sick for like a week and a half. I feel like it really dragged on. I don't know. We don't know what he had. Maybe RSV or not. I don't think it wasn't COVID. But
I had a nice
something.
Rattly lung. And
yeah, that's all right. You probably had RSV, honestly. So Chris was real sick and he was still doing his damnedest to try to get through all this reading, largely because reading was maybe the only activity he could actually do while ill. And when he read Taurus 4, that was like peak sick delusion.
Oh, yeah.
Like he was like miserable playing shows while sick and then trying to read this. So if Chris misses anything in the summary, let's all forgive him today because it was...
Thank you.
Actually, a fever dream. He actually read this in a. This was a fever dream for him because he
was
read
feverish.
It while having fevers. Yeah. So, all right. Our characters and setting here. Our setting is on the eponymous Taurus 4, which is a planet. I forget if it's supposed to be in our solar system or not, or if they ever give us.
Oh,
that
definitely
detail.
Outside the solar system. Do you mean like galaxy?
Okay, it is a. Anyway. Planet reachable by Earth transit 300 years roughly 300 years from now in 2070. We have Dorian Frank the 14th, space sociologist, which makes no sense. QQ, his best Earth friend. Alice, the human girlfriend he like got from QQ because I don't know, they were engaged and didn't work out and he was like, I'll take her, like one girlfriend please. Mike Lessa, Dorian's shitty mom, who he talks about not liking a whole lot. Tita, the beautiful about-to-be-sacrificed virgin. Thora, Tita's mom. Berndine, the knowledgeable crone. Pete, the leader of Taurus 4. Dales, humanoid cave bears who sing, who are not indigenous to the planet and are in fact a separate alien race from another planet. The Dale Snark, the evil ocean god, who I think is just a shark that the That
yeah,
like
I think
got
it's
off
just
the
some
Dale
shark.
Ship.
It's not
just
even like a special unique. It's probably a bunch of different sharks that Pete was like, there he is, the rival god.
And then there's God, which is just still water with your reflection in it.
Yeah. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. So those are all the kind of the main characters that matter. All right. Here's Chris's fever-induced summary. Dorian Frank the 14th just crash-landed on Taurus 4, and it's 2 months until the rescue mission gets there. So he may as well put those space sociologist skills to work and hide in a cave while murdering local wildlife for food. A few days in, something that looks like an upright bear gets in his cave, so Dorian zaps it to death and decides to uproot his camp and head to the forest, despite his worry over encountering other potentially scarier creatures or sentient beings. Turns out, there are sentient beings through the forest. Seems like a group of hippies left Earth a few hundred years ago after being tempted away by a different alien race and were just plopped here on Taurus 4. They found a consistent food source in the forest. There are trees that drop melons pretty regularly, but they also met with some resistance, the bear creatures whom they called Dales. Despite it only being 300 years, the current generation has lapsed into full cartoon caveman mode, speaking in pidgin English despite literally having a dictionary available to reference and other things they brought from Earth. Anyway, the hippie cavemen are led by Pete, who is a theocratic, authoritarian, rapist-murdering asshole. He's just cartoon villain. He claims to know the intentions of God and drags Dorian over to a well to see the face of God. If Dorian can see it, then he is allowed to stay with the commune. Turns out that the face of God is just your own fucking face reflected in the water. Dorian plays along since he could use the help from the commune over the next 2 months. However, he learns that Pete thinks that God requires regular human sacrifice in order to be placated. This, of course, at this point in the story, must be a virgin white woman. Why is it never a slutty dude? Anyway, next up on the sacrifice block is Tita, who is beautiful and blonde and 15 and submissive and naked all the time, which is all Dorian really needs to fall in love with her immediately. While all this is going on, Dorian has also been chatting with Berndine, the local smart old lady who thinks Pete's ideas are a little bullshit. Berndine helps Dorian sneak around and gather intelligence, as well as get away from the commune with Tita. Dorian needs to get back to where his ship crash landed for pickup by the rescue crew, and intends to take Tita with him. On the way, they are accosted by Pete and his loyalists. Pete falls in a fucking well and dies.
Really banana peels it's too funny. Honestly.
Yeah, just banana peels it. Dorian makes it to the pickup spot and is married to Tita on the spot aboard the rescue ship, despite the Federation having strict quarantine guidelines, but it's okay this time because Tita can sing the Dales Away or whatever and is small and hot, and Dorian obviously loves her, I guess. The end.
Real riveting, complicated story there, I'm sure you all can hear.
I mean, there was a whole part that's missing about how the Dales are actually, like, sentient and intelligent, and they're like, they got crash landed there as well, and now they're gonna get rescued by their people, but if their people come to rescue them, they'll kill all the humans. I don't know why, though. It's never made clear why that would be a thing, because as far as we know, the Dales have only eaten humans because they have run out of food, and I don't know, I guess they can't eat melons. I don't know.
On the Dale physiology. Paris, I'm now realizing that it sounds like we're just talking about a bunch of guys named Dale. And that's not how it's spelled. D-A-E-L.
Entire race of Dale Gribbles. Yeah. All Dale Gribble. All the way down. All right. Now that you kind of know the basic events of the story, let's talk about how we felt about this, Chris. How did we feel about technical construction?
I mean, this is another easy point for this one. Like, it's a competently put together book, little to no type. Because I guess back then, you know, you couldn't just, like, throw it up on Amazon. There was no paper to be sacrificed to the god in the well that is just the reflection of a book cover that you're holding up to the well. So, like, you know, people really wanted to make sure they got shit right back then in terms of that, you would think. And, like, the pacing seems fine for what it is. It's like 180 pages. It's not exactly brisk in terms of a read, but, like, you know, the rudimentary plot goes along just fine. I don't ever really feel like we stood around waiting too long for something to happen.
Yeah, it was 156 pages, but it did get it. It felt laborious because I immediately hated it. I think that's that's why. But it was totally fine in terms of, like, construction. This author, I assume, clearly had written before or, like, studied writing well because they could string together some sentences, and that was fine. No weird formatting or layout. Like, everything flowed pretty normally. So a point. A point.
1 point. So are we immediately moving into plot and characters?
Yeah, let's talk about the general coherence of the plot and then the character quality. Chris, do you want to start us off on general coherence of the plot?
Sure. I mean, just right away, can we just focus on how 300 years has passed since fully modern space sci-fi human beings have landed or been taken to this planet. Now, I understand it was like the hippie section of humanity, and this author doesn't like hippies and probably thinks they need to get a job or whatever, right? You know, so I'm even granted that 300 years isn't that long in terms of generations. Let's be generous and say that survivability was relatively low on this planet before, I don't know, they got the melon game on point or whatever. And let's say, like, a generation is 40 or 50 years. So we're saying, like, top, like, 6 or 7 generations passed, right?
Yeah.
I don't think you could fully devolve to the point where, like, they're barely even doing fires here, I think. They're literally just, like, going into caves.
They don't know. Yeah, they don't have fire. They don't wear clothes. They speak in this weird, stilted pidgin of English. Like, me, you, likey, like, go there. It's absolutely absurd. It would be laughable if it wasn't so embarrassing.
They have a dictionary. They can read it. It's not like it's some sacred text that no one can read except for, like, knowledgeable people. It really seems like they can all read it. And I know that, you know, definitions aren't exactly the exact same thing as human speech or, like, how we actually speak things. But there's sentences in there. There's, like, grammar and stuff, right? So I don't understand how you would lose that.
Well, I think, you know, we normally don't research authors for the show before we read the book, and I didn't beforehand, but afterward, I did because I was like, why was this recommended for the show? You know, and I was just like, okay, it's a crappy random sci-fi book, but there has to be something going on here. Sure enough, I think the reason it was recommended is because Rena Vale was a fucking rat.
author.
So she was in the Communist Party, got kicked out because, I don't know, she felt like she wasn't valued enough by the men, felt like she experienced some misogyny, got kicked out for whatever reason, and then immediately turned her ass around and was like, I'm going to go get clout from the U.S. government. I'm going to go to HUAC and I'm going to tattletale on all these bitches. And that's exactly what she did. And so she ended up getting a bunch of notoriety during the Red Scare as being like, a commie that turned and, like, she's a good American now. And so she worked directly for the McCarthy administration, for McCarthy himself. And yeah, so this whole thing, I think this whole, like, how could they possibly have devolved that much in 300 years is her saying those dirty fucking commie hippies don't take care of themselves. They don't prioritize knowledge or language. They just fell apart. And, you know, they can't have a normal society. I think that's all this was her trying to paint people who weren't part of the American capitalist, you know, whatever you want to call the government in this country.
The industrial warfare hegemony. Society, which she even put on the back of the book. So I guess you're endorsing that?
Yes, exactly. So that's all. I mean, because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, for me, it's like, even if you are going to regress because you just don't have access to the same technology, of course you'll regress a little bit if you can't, like, mine space crystals or whatever the fuck you need to do, you know, interplanetary travel. You would still probably regress to perhaps medieval era in that time. Like, if I'm being generous, right, there should be, like, peasant clothing or something. Like, they even admit that the sun is fucking hot. The sun is hot and they get burned sometimes, so clothing seems like the thing to do.
I honestly wouldn't even think about it on a scale of, like, regression or progression, because that's also, like, a
colonialist idea. You're totally right about that.
Not trying to call you out, just trying to make clear to the listeners that we don't believe in such a scale. But yeah, you're right. Like, if things were to differ over time, they would not differ this drastically, for sure. And they would come up with, what else are you going to do? There's no fucking TV. There's no books except for your dictionary you brought. I don't know. Maybe they brought other books. Who knows? Like, when people are idle, they come up with inventions. People, I think, are sort of naturally geared to, like, be curious and create things, right? And I'm not trying to say, like, oh, we got to be productive, but, like, if there's nothing going on, if you are literally on a fucking planet stranded there, don't you think you'd be like, I don't know, how can I make life a little more comfortable or easier? Or, like, can I make something that's fun or creative or artistic? Like,
no one's even
these people do none of this. They do nothing. They do nothing. They literally just wrestle and eat melons and sacrifice people. That's all they do. It is the most simplistic, ridiculous fucking, like, idea of a society I think we have ever read on this show.
Even Pete being like, no, the melons are all we need because God provides. I don't, like, you'd be curious that, like, hey, that leaf looks a little tasty, or even that weird animal that, like, no rebellious teen is like, fuck you, Dad, I'm going to eat this space spinach or something, right? Like,
I'm going to kill this kangaroo, Dad, fuck you. Yeah, I think, again, I think their whole purely melon diet is a dig at vegetarians and vegans, right? Like, fucking idiots, like, just eating melons. Like, I think it's actually like an
anti-welfare thing. It's like, if you just give them what they need, they'll never, like, choose to go beyond that.
Ah, Chris, why not both? Why not hate the vegetarians and vegans and the welfare recipients? In this house, we hate everyone.
Jesus Christ.
On this planet, we hate everyone equally. You know, and in my mind, I'm like, well, it's a space fruit. Like, we don't know if it's actually, you know, complex and nutrient dense. But generally speaking, human beings cannot just live on melons. If it's like a Earth melon, I don't know, though. I mean, this is a distant planet. It could be something else. So it's kind of ridiculous in that way, too. And then, Chris, what's the only other thing they put in their mouths? It's the only other thing they put in their mouths. You want to tell us?
The hemp they brought along with them, I suppose, because hippies and weed, that's what they always be doing. Although, okay, so even if you're gonna be like the hippies got dragged across the galaxy and deposited on this planet, they still got their hemp with them. They would remember how to smoke the weed the right way, Paris.
They would remember fire and how useful it is to smoke the fucking weed, right? Like, oh,
if you're going to play into the whole idle hippie thing, I feel like token on the joint all the time is the really easy route to go. And even then, they're chewing the stalks. And it, like, the author acts as if that is getting them stoned. Now, to be clear, if you eat the buds, the part with the psychoactive chemical in abundance upon them, which is the thing that you get in the little baggies. I don't know if y'all know this. But the weed part is the bud, not just like any part of the plant. So if any institutional knowledge survived from the original group, I feel like it would be how to do weed the right way.
Yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't make any sense. So this idiot author, I'm sorry, she's getting the idiot tag. She's also dead, so whatever.
That's what happens to idiots.
She's like, yeah, the leader, he's always chewing the hemp stalks and he's crazed. There's almost no THC, which is a psychoactive chemical in weed. There's almost none of it in a stalk. You cannot get high by chewing stalks from a hemp plant. It's not possible. So at least get your fucking drug consumption shit right. Because, of course, this author also has to try to equate heroin and weed and as the same thing, as like the same playing field of drug, and how, they're just drug crazed and they really depend on this. It's like,
I mean, classic anti-hippie shit here, right? Not that I'm like pro-hippie, but I probably generally pro-hippie. I didn't know people well enough back then because I wasn't alive to make an actual judgment on them. But like,
Chris, how dare you not know people before you were alive? What a fucking fraud.
I know.
Get out of here.
I've been found out. I mean, point being, like, it's the same shit we've seen before about, like, those lazy jerks. And it's just old hat for us at this point.
Yeah. I was trying to find that passage about them sacrificing. So the human sacrifice thing, right? This is also an attempt to paint this hippie society as, quote unquote, devolved or regressive on this, you know, arbitrary white person colonialism scale or whatever. Like, they're sacrificing people. And there is a point in the book where we learn that there was a split in the humans. And at some point, some people were like, fuck Pete, we're going to go live elsewhere. And they had like a different leader and they broke off from the group and moved to a different part of that area. And they worshipped the Dale Snark, which was just a fucking shark that got loose from the Dale ship. Because I guess Dales ate sharks or something. I don't know, something weird like that. Like, when the Dales had crash landed, the shark somehow, escaped. And so they worshipped the shark and they sacrificed the shark. And that offshoot of the main group, they were like, we've been sacrificing a kid every 2 to 3 days. I was like, Holy shit! How much are you breeding? How many people are there?
That's a really high rate of sacrifice, guys. Like,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure like societies that were doing that in our own human history weren't like, it's been 3 days. Who's up next? Right?
Yeah, it's a lot of sacrifice. I really need to find that spot.
All right, Paris, to have a human sacrifice every 2 to 3 days, right? So that's roughly...
Yeah, let's do the math here.
100 children or virgins sacrificed to you. You know, let's say 150, just to keep it like 2 days, roughly every 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to have someone popping out a child every 3 days to keep up with this rate.
So there is,
and there's not a lot of these hippies down here. It doesn't really seem
It didn't seem like there was more than I don't even know if it was a couple hundred. It seemed like it could have been 50 hippies. Like, it was,
maybe there were a lot more before. Maybe they really trimmed it down and they were like, I don't know, maybe we should really stop. Is anyone even a virgin anymore?
All right, here's, actually, I found it. All right, John was chief there, like Pete here, but he more crazy in the head. When he was here, he wanted all the time to take chief place. He argue with Pete, say he not understand the god in the well, that the real god lived in the big water, where we used to go to gather salt plant and swim. Oh, so they do know what fucking salt is, okay. Marta found her courage and took over at that point. One day, the Dale Snark came up very close to the land, grabbed a little boy, one of my sisters, and carried him away. Make the water very bloody. Pete say Dale come down from hills, go in the big water. John say not Dale at all, but big brother of Dale, which was Dale Snark. Pete say maybe God's brother, he's so big and so fast and so strong, the older woman put in. So, Marta went on, John say he right all along that real God live in the big water, come up in well only sometimes. He tell us then, when we see that he is maybe right, that we must come with him to Big Water to be near God so he could talk with him and tell us what he say. Did he talk to the god? Dorian wished for his recorder so he could take back a record of this primitive dissertation. Perhaps the lofty Rabkin would condescend to listen to the record of a space scientist actually meeting the tribe. Marta answered his question. John go up on high cliff over the Big Water and throw out his arms. She started to demonstrate the gesture, but broke off when she caught curious glances from the group of lounging women. He yelled very loud to Dale Snark, then he turned back to us and say, "The god is hungry. We must feed. Maybe every 2 to 3 days we feed the god one of our children. He liked girls best and sometimes women. Those with big bellies to have baby he liked."
Okay, so this was relatively recent in sort of the cycle of these hippies. But even still, he does suggest a 2 to 3 day waiting period for human sacrifice.
It is unclear, though, like, whether they actually did that.
But even still, John,
in
you
any
can
case,
see the flaw in your plan, right?
Right, and like too many human sacrifices, even in, like, the Pete group or whatever. It seemed like it was pretty regular, and like on a planet where you're the only humans, why would you be wasting the lives of the humans you have? It just, I mean, especially considering like they had to figure out what was on this planet to use for like medicine or, you know, reparative stuff, right? Like, you kind of have to reinvent your whole idea of how to care for each other and how do you deal with disease. And if, you know, if the odds are against you, maybe don't fucking kill your fellow humans. Doesn't make any sense.
I mean, this is definitely the author trying to once again cast this group as very stupid and, you know, I don't want to use the word regressed again now.
No, but you're right. That is how, I mean, that is sort of the framework that the author's working with. This very, like, 18th, 19th century anthropologist shit, right? Like, it's just gross.
But yeah, so I mean, the coherence of the plot, like, it's a coherent plot in terms of, I suppose, Dorian has to escape from the savages, but the coherence completely breaks down in terms of how this society is set up, unless you're trying to make it absurdly cartoonishly savage.
Well, also, I mean, the basic elements of the story are like, guy goes to explore planet that they already know can support human breathing. So the atmosphere is amenable to humans. So he crashes and he's able to get out of the spacecraft and like walk around. So that, sure, I guess. I mean, fine. And then he comes upon people who already crash landed there. Okay, fine. And then there's an enemy. Okay, fine. And then they like get away from the enemy. Like the very basic number two pencil outline. Sure, it's your basic ass plot, but I think the coherence breaks down, like you said, when we start to look at the people as described as, you know, having lived on this planet, and then the stuff about Dorian and Tita, like, falling for each other. Like, bro, you are a 30-something-year-old dude. She is a 15-year-old girl. It is 300 years in the future. Did you... So y'all forget what, like, consent was and, like, fucking pedophilia? Like, no, that's fine.
Dorian
so
is explicitly attracted to her because she's kind of dumb.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's 100%. He admits it.
Yeah, one brain cell submissive because all the women back on Earth, you see, are too demanding and the whole society has been taken over by women, so men have to do what their wives tell them and, oh, it's horrible, and he just yearns to have someone to...
Someone who supposedly ran up against misogyny in the Communist Party, and that's why they left. That seems like an interesting twist to add here.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. This is like the most pick me shit ever. Like, this whole woman's life was like, pick me, please. I just want notoriety and acceptance, and it's fucking sad. But you know, it leads to stuff like this.
And we get a nice cartoony villain falls in the well resolution to things. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah. Like you said, real banana peel shit right there. Like, no big battle, just fucking hits his head in the well and drowns.
Bridge the gap with the Dales. Dorian receives a vision from, like, a sort of a dying Dale mother. And they're just like, yeah, we were also looking for a place to crash and hang out and, like, eat food because we needed resources. But it's not like anything is done with that, so like, why include it?
Yeah, the weirdest part about it is, like, you know, the hippie colony or whatever thinks the Dales are evil because they've eaten some of their people, but it's just because they don't have any food. They don't want to do that. And it's weird because Dorian sometimes is like approaching a brain cell and he's like, oh, is this sort of like me having to murder the animals on this planet for food, or like how we eat like cows and pigs or whatever, or, you know, whatever this future equivalent of that is? And he's like, nah, like he almost has like an emotional thought of empathy. And then he's like, eh, and just veers off.
Never even thought to offer the melons to the Dales.
Yeah. Like, I can't believe that you would have 300 years of just pure fear and running away and never trying to resolve the Dale conflict. That's a long fucking time.
There's
to not even attempt.
Dale feast in the vision that Dorian receives where there's fruit. So it's not like their digestive system can't handle it. So good opportunity there to perhaps like forge some alliance between the two groups that are clearly struggling. But no, Dorian says just like, I'm just going to take this one lady off world and get married so I don't have to talk to my bitch girlfriend at home or whatever.
Yeah, it's real weird. I mean, maybe the melons on Taurus 4 don't sit well with them. We don't know. But so it's like there's an opportunity for there to be a real connection because he sees this mother and her dying cub and she's dying and it's really sad. And he's like, oh, man, it's so sad. And then he's like, oh, well, better kill him anyway. And just fucking zonks him. Like, what? I just don't. And then, you know, whenever they meet more Dales, they just kill them, right? I don't understand why you would introduce, like, oh, maybe I should be empathetic, and then just refuse that. Just turn away from it entirely. It's real troubling. It's stupid because it's like, oh, look, this other society is just as, you know, sort of as quote unquote advanced. I'm saying that with the bunny ears, my fingers are bunnying, you know, as humans. But then, like you said, it's sort of just left. It's like, okay, but then they don't care anyway. I mean, maybe that is the most human reaction of all, right? Like,
yep.
We know we should be empathetic and not murder things, but we do it anyway. Let's talk about character quality. We've already sort of veered in that direction, but...
Yeah. Dorian is kind of the doofiest doofus I've ever seen in a lot of ways. And for someone that's, again, is supposed to study, have probably some knowledge of interactions of societies and things, for the reasons that you just pointed out, seems to barely have a couple of neurons to rub together to figure out, like, ways to approach, like, the situation that he gets involved in. And really, mostly thinks with his dick, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. He thinks of his dick and his stomach. That's it.
I can understand thinking with your stomach when you're in like a survival situation in a lot of ways. But
of course, yeah.
There's the part where he introduces clothing to this society, to Tita in particular, and he notices that, was it Tita that goes to wash it or was it someone else in the commune?
No, it was Tita.
And so Tita goes and is like, oh, I should probably wash these. And Dorian is like, wow, I guess women just love washing clothes. It's just part of their natural state of being.
Wow, women just naturally love to wash clothes, even though she didn't know what clothes were.
He's going to put that in his thesis for this is the field work that he's finally come down to. Even on strange planets, the woman enjoys dipping the clothing in water. No soap, though.
It's just painful to read. It really is in every way. And like you said, it's like, what kind of training program was this? Was this like fucking, you know, Trump college space sociologist that, training? Like, what, yeah, did he just watch some
space Trump,
YouTube
space
videos?
College in space. Oh, yeah, it's a PragerU. That's, all right. It's all PragerU in the future, it turns out. As you can see, this woman is washing clothing because she loves to do it. The liberals would have you believe that there's other thoughts in her brain. There are other thoughts, but it is cooking dinner, and that is it.
Actually, wait, where's the... I think I noted the... Yeah, women want to wash clothes. That's worth reading just to get the true flavor. Not
I mean,
this
will cover
by...
prose quality as well, too, so two for the price of one.
A whiff of long-dead carrion brought him up short. He recalled that it was the same stench that had come from the carcass of the cave bear from which he had taken the stiff hide for sandals. Those sandals had not proven very satisfactory, but at least they had provided some protection. He sniffed again and located the direction of the carrion. It was apparently in a rather large cave which yawned up a short incline. Not wishing to subject Tita to unnecessary unpleasantness, he suggested that she bathe in the stream they had been following. He promised her he would keep the stunner handy and watch for prowling dales, and warned her not to get out of his range of sight. Eagerly, she peeled off the sweat-soaked shorts and shirt. He took off his own clothing and showed her how to wash the articles in the stream and lay them on rocks in the sun to dry. No sooner had he laid them out than she gathered them up. No, no, let them stay there. Let them dry so we can put them on more easily. I know, I let them dry, but I wash now. I think I do more better than you. He laughed. It's instinctive, I guess. Something carried in the genes that makes women want to wash clothes. She swished and rubbed the pieces of... Like, that's said out loud by the character. That is not me ad-libbing. She swished and rubbed the pieces of clothing, wrung them almost expertly, and smoothed them on the sun-heated stones as though she had been doing that woman chore for years. Unknown to her, Dorian took several pictures of her in various stages of the operation.
Motherfuck.
While nude, by the way. A nude 15-year-old girl. Ahem. He decided on a caption for the strip and noted it on the recorder. The laundry chute isn't working on Taurus 4! Blah! Okay. Have you ever read more pick me shit in your life? I don't know.
He literally out loud, like you said, just like, wow, I guess genetically women would desire to clean clothing.
All right, and then I've got a longer passage to read about, like, where he's, like, about to rub two brain cells together but gets distracted by, I don't know, Tita's tits or something. So, here we go. The only kind of men who should go into space were those without sensibilities. Sociologists were not needed, and if by chance one was found in a crew, he should be tossed into the brig at once and kept there until after the ship returned to Earth. I mean, yeah, I guess if they're all like you, absolutely.
Reasonable plan.
The Space Academy should teach that all creatures of alien planets were dumb and hostile animals and should be exterminated on sight. Communication between Earth people and intelligent beings on other planets should be strictly forbidden. Earth might should be built up so that it could crush all other civilizations. The needs and desires of Earth were right. There were no other rights. Earth's warships and weapons and regimented soldiery must be perfected and kept in condition to enforce those rights. That was the only way space explorers of Earth could function efficiently. To communicate, to permit oneself to become involved emotionally with alien creatures, brought doubt of the total rightness of Earth and mankind. Did the strong and virile men of the American Old West ever doubt the rightness of white Yankees in pushing westward to the Pacific Ocean? Were there any among them who had the bad judgment to listen to the red man's tale of woe? If so, history obliterated them. History recorded the deeds of the strong, not of the weaklings who fell by the wayside. "I make you mad, Dorian? Why you no talk to me?" Dorian turned back to help the limping girl over a rough area. "I'm mad, yes, but mad at myself. No you." She giggled charmingly and continued to hold the hand he had extended.
"You so strong and so brave, why you mad at self?"
"Because I'm a puling sentimentalist, because I should have taken a job behind a solidly earthbound desk in the space agency, listened to my mother, married Alicia, and have Dorian Frank the 15th well on his way. I'm not good for anything else. I muffed my first solo landing on an alien planet. I disregarded the instructions of the manual and got myself all mixed up in the religious practices of an attenuated culture and in the woes of animal predators."
"You talk strange things. I think you sad. I not like to see you sad. Is because I keep you from go fast to your Earthship?"
"No. If my chronometer is right, I have several days yet."
"Maybe not right, you think?"
"Maybe not. Maybe I'll be punished for all my transgressions and sentenced to life on Taurus IV. What life I'll have left after His August Majesty, the chieftain of all the people, metes out his swift and terrible justice."
"You worry much."
"I worry much." He caught the girl up into his arms, buried his face in the softness of her breasts, and stifled something like a sob. "I worry much what will become of you, a tender child left to the mercies of prowling predators, of a drug-crazed chieftain, and protectors who may be eliminated by any number of means at any time."
"You think of Dale's, too."
"Of the agony of starvation, of seeing all one's people die, and worst of all, watching the death of a generation's long hope just at the moment of rescue. It's a tragedy to which I must contribute, a sorrow that can be assuaged only by compounding it with other galactic woes."
"Dale's not all bad, you think?"
"I refuse to think! If only they'd fallen on the bodies of their dead and started to devour them! Oh, shit, I can't. Whew! Ooh, I need a break. Ooh, oh God.
I felt the two brain cells rubbing together, and I can't have that. It'll set my whole mind on fire.
"If only they'd fallen on the bodies of their dead and started to devour them, I could hate them as I should hate them. True, they're predators, but so am I. Earth people kill defenseless creatures and eat them. If only we'd had the tree of life, which your people have, we might have developed into a more gentle and reasonable people." The girl laughed and squirmed out of his arms.
"You funny. Pete not gentle and what you call reasonable. Others who went to worship Dale Snark do much killing. We people like Earth people, like Dale's. Not all good, not all bad. Even fucking Tina can rub her brain cells together, god damn it."
"And you, my whimsical witch, have supplied the balm for my bleeding wounds." He swept her up again. She didn't say it in words, but with her arms around his neck and her lips offered to his, the plea was unspoken. "Take me to Earth with you." Okay.
I don't know why, but specifically when you said, like, "I must look at my chronometer," like, that, like, hit me how much this passage feels like you're reading from a very overt parody of this kind of 70s sci-fi, but it's so straight-faced.
Oh, yeah. I personally love that right as he's about, right as the brain cells are about to touch, he literally puts his head into her tits. That's like actually what happens.
"I refuse to think. Boobs.
Motorboat time. I refuse to think." And, you know, because he's, so you can see that the author is like, okay, I'm going to illustrate the character thinking about this and the more complex nuances of different societies from different groups and even different planets meeting, but then he's like, "Yeah, fuck it anyway."
Yes.
God damn it.
It's like the whole book is like, okay, perhaps there's something to think about here, but like, nah, I'd rather eat melons and put my face in melons.
All right. Well, now that all of us also have one brain cell because the rest were murdered by my rendition of that passage.
It's been 30 minutes and that's all it takes to reduce your brain cells to full ungabunga mode if you don't have the right kind of resources.
You know, and that, I mean, that passage was a lot, but I mean, there's literally a scene where Tita, completely nude, walks up to Dorian carrying a platter with two melons on it, like at the height of her own breasts. It's like a cartoon image. And yeah, he's just like, man, I just really want a submissive girl. And look, I don't really want to get too into this, but like, y'all know why that's a problem, right? Like,
yeah.
All right. You know,
I feel
if you
like
don't.
I made this rubric explicitly that we don't have to relitigate this stuff all the time, right? Paris.
So, yeah. Like... Yeah. I don't want to relitigate, like, why that's a problem in a 1970s sci fi book or now, but it sucks. And the whole, like, oh no, Earth is dominated by evil women who tell me what to do. It's like, oh, it doesn't really. It's weird because he says that, but then I think about it and I'm like, I don't know, is that actually what's happening or is that your fucking man baby perspective, asshole?
Yeah, it really just seems like Alice and Mike Lessa are just like, hey, get your shit together a little bit. You're a 35-year-old space sociologist. You've never been to an alien planet once.
Yeah, I mean, it. You know, I'm sure that Mike Lessa did seem like kind of a shitty mom, but that doesn't mean that all women are like, because he's assuming that Alicia's going to be that way.
True.
Without having any evidence that it will be. So it's like, look, take your fucking mommy baggage and go to a space therapist. All right, Dorian? Like, please.
Also got the degree from Space Trump University, so probably not that effective therapist. Have you
Phaser
considered fucking
you.
Off to another Have you considered fucking off to a completely different planet and subjugating a teenager from that area?
Yeah, a 15-year-old girl with one brain cell. It's great. It's what we all want, right? Anyway.
Galactic mail order bride, really, from across the galaxy.
Yes. There's, you know, sorry, I know we've talked about Dorian a lot, but there's another thing that bugs me about his character. And that is that we see his sort of evolution and redemption arc, well, as painted by this author, right? So, not what Chris and I would consider an evolution, character evolution,
no.
Redemption arc, but, you know, what this author has decided she wants, you know, men to read and praise her for, is that Dorian starts out as a heavier guy, right? Like, at the beginning, this is a key part of his character, and I actually thought the description of his character was decent at the beginning, you know, kind of explaining what kind of person he was, what his life had been like to that point. Let me see if I can find that, because I think it is worth reading. Yeah, this is good enough. All right, so this is the first night he crash lands on Taurus 4, and he's having a shitty restless sleep where he has a dream. And in that dream, a long-legged girl with carelessly chopped blonde hair and a tunic that was so short it exposed non-matching panties called to him across a deserted playground. Tubby, she taunted. I can beat you to the shower room. His anger flared at the sound of the hated nickname. It wasn't his fault that he was roly-poly. Go ahead and beat me, he flung back. You need a shower, you smelly girl. I don't. Alicia Gleave, several months younger, 2 inches taller, and ahead of him in every class, insisted he was the mate she wanted. She waited for him on the playing field, where he either sidelined himself or came in last in a contest. She shared a shower with him, touched him tenderly and admiringly, despite the fact that there were rolls of superfluous flesh on his back and belly. She had wanted him when they were 12, but he felt no desire for girls then. Later, when they were 16, and she had grown into a beautiful and tall young woman, he wanted her painfully, but she had turned to his best friend, QQ. He awakened, imagining he felt Alicia's lilac-tattooed lips brush his. So there's like a little memory, it's sort of a dream memory there, where he's like recalling being taunted, but you know, this girl liked him even though he was bigger, and he was like, I don't know, I'm not into sex yet. And then a few years later he was like, fuck, now I am, god damn it. And you know, and then later she ends up back with him anyway when they're much older, because she and QQ didn't work out or whatever. But like, you know, and there are multiple points where we return to this idea of him being a little heavier and like how it affects him. And at first I was like, okay, this is kind of endearing me to this character because I too am a heavier person and have been for the vast majority of my life. And like, I, you know, I too have superfluous flesh rolls. So, you know, it, and there are, I just feel like so many books, you don't really get to see yourself as a heavier, bigger person, right? So whenever that does happen, I'm like, okay, maybe you're getting me here. But then, as the book continues, it's like, oh, at the end of the book, Dorian is super cool and gets the girl because he's lost a bunch of weight due to starving on this planet. And I'm like, God fucking damn.
Yeah, and that kind of like even is presented as like now he's more of a real man because he's gotten he got the physique that you're supposed to have. He's got the submissive girlfriend that you're supposed to have.
Now we can fit in the bondage harness that's on the cover, right? Or
yeah,
whatever.
Finally. I bought it so long ago and I've just been waiting to stuff my butt into it.
Just like these, and I know this is sort of, this is like a very minor current in this book, but it's still there and it's something that's always in a lot of media is like, you have to shrink yourself. You have to be smaller. You're always smaller, less weight, smaller, smaller. You must starve. And it just kills me. Like, just, why can't people, why can't there just be cool people at different sizes? Why do we got to do this all the time? Why? Ugh. Even 50 years ago, and it's still happening now. We just can't get rid of it. We all got to lose weight all the time. You only have value if you're smaller, if you've lost weight. Losing weight is the greatest thing you can do in your entire fucking life. It's just annoying. So that was another thing that kind of sucked, because it was too bad, because I was like, oh, you're making this character a little more of an everyday person, right? He's not like a big muscle dude in space. He's like, eh, I'm kind of a schlubby nerd. And you're like, oh, I'm a schlubby nerd too.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Relatable.
But then it gets taken away. Then it gets taken away because you can't be cool and a schlubby nerd when in fact you can. And I hate that.
Terrible Book Club schlub stands.
Give me your fat. You're unexercised. You're weak.
That's me right now after that sickness. Okay, so feels like plot and characters get a big negative one here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm trying to think if there's any other characters we want to talk about. I mean, I feel like the characters are largely the author going, okay, I need X to happen in the plot, so now Y character must exist. They're really just utilitarian. They don't feel terribly real, but they're like, I don't know, a shade sturdier than like a paper doll. So maybe instead of a paper doll, we've got like corrugated cardboard. <They're>
like, there's a layer still of flimsy, paint on there somewhere.
But yeah, it's still flimsy, but they can maybe stand up on their own with a little tape, right? And then the bad guy, like I said, is just cartoonish. I mean, this is sort of awful and graphic, but he like rapes, disembowels, and murders children. And clearly it's not because he really thinks there's a god, it's because it's like what he wants to do, and it's just, again, it's just making people who do drugs, even though this guy is chewing on hemp stems and there's no THC in there,
he's not even high.
It's just not even doing drugs, but this
also,
is, you know,
really
the author
ripping through the human sacrifice storage there if you're doing like five in one go, right? Like, we gotta space these kids out.
Yeah, we gotta calm the fuck down. Yeah, it's just clearly just more of this like Red Scare stuff. Like, oh, if you let the hippies smoke weed and live in a big house together, naturally that just turns into child disembowelment and sacrifice, right? Like, that's how that works.
I completely see how that gets from one point to the next.
Even though those things don't have anything to do with each other. All right. If you have nothing else, let's move on to prose and dialogue. I already read a lot of prose and dialogue, so let's just say what we feel.
We gave you the example here. We brought this up in technical stuff too. Like, certainly words can be strung together into coherent sentences to create a very rudimentary plot.
Yeah, I feel like it's pretty clear that Rena, you know, took writing a novel 101 and probably got like a B or an A- or something, right? Like, she's done some writing before. But it's overall just tropey, silly, ridiculous. I mean, the eternalized misogyny is like a deep well within Vale, right? Like, I have rarely seen
this
a demonstration like
magna
this.
Magna cum laude English lit master's material at Phaser U.
Yeah, and I mean, and knowing, you know, it as I started to smell the scent of, you know, something untoward, I was like, is this supposed to be like anti-commie? And then looked up the author and was like, yep, sure was. I mean, it just made me feel so much worse about it. You know, it's clearly, you know, just the whole thing is rotten, right? Like from top to bottom.
Yeah.
The rotten melon.
Yeah. Rotten melons. Unless you have any other passages specifically that you'd like to highlight, I'm comfortable just slapping the old negative one on this and moving on.
I mean, there's always... I'm sure I can find something fucking stupid. Let's just do the old...
Yeah, give it the old random. Give it the old random page treatment.
Ahem. In his background studies for sociology, he remembered listening to spools of an old book... Iki Ishki, or something like that, about the impact of a 20th century Earth civilization on a primitive of the planet. Okay, then maybe there were more typos in this when we were called. As he, two of the selections I've read have had problems. As he dimly remembered it, the primitive, whose intelligence quotient was high, reacted in much the same way Tita had done. He didn't recall if a love interest were involved, but thought there was some hint of it. Now we're relying on, IQ, you know, the meaningless arbitrary number that white, you know, Westerners have decided means something, and therefore we must reference it.
Do you ever
it.
Hear someone talk about their IQ and immediately know that they're dumb as fuck because they brought up the concept of IQ?
I think a lot of people are just misinformed about it and think that intelligence quotients are like real and should be trusted, which is unfortunate. I think the vast majority of the public thinks it's an actual measure of something when it is in fact horseshit. So sometimes I have heard people bring it up and just from the context of their statement know that they just don't know. But yeah, a lot of people who try to talk about their own IQ, absolutely, throw the whole person in the fucking trash. Like, goodbye.
It's like the biggest, easiest sign to be like, well, I don't actually have to pay attention to what you have to say.
Yeah, never mind. I could just put you on mute. While it was true that Tita's heritage was not that of actual primitism, there had been a number of generations of adaptation to primitive culture. You know that one... quote-unquote primitive culture
exists? The primitive culture.
The. Dorian planned to prepare some text spools on the girl's development to be entitled Tita. Ooh, look at you. That half a brain cell. He was quite sure that Alicia would secretly disapprove, but would flaunt her objective and broad-minded attitude by subjecting all their friends to the records. Hey, honey, come in here. I gotta show everyone my porn of the 15-year-old girl I found on that planet. Okay.
Does this go towards credit for my space sociology degree?
Oh, come on. It's fine if it's academic. Don't worry. Let's see. What else we got here? Whatever. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Fuck this. Through the book. Through the book. All right.
Negative one. Three blows. Right?
Oh, yeah, negative one, please. Hard negative one. Tereblo's presence. I think Tereblo's shown up to kick these gods' asses. I think that Stillwater God, Reflection God, fucked. Ocean God, Shark, fucked. Tereblo's here.
I mean, the Stillwater God is literally just a face. It's a reflection of someone else. It's barely anything. So even if you wanted to say that that is a god, how's it going to fight back against Tereblo?
Yeah, good luck.
Also, I will say, Tereblo, a more magnanimous deity in that he specifically wants to only torture two people instead of demanding sacrifice of many different kinds of people over a short period of time. So
that's
true. Count yourselves lucky that it is us that must bear this burden.
Yeah. And like, we're still allowed to live our lives, you know? I mean, he's not taking blood sacrifice. It's just mind sacrifice, which is somewhat more tolerable.
Mind sacrifice.
Yeah, I don't... Let's go there.
Into the escape
from Taurus 4. Can you fuck me, Tina?
You're way more on point with the jokes today, dude.
I don't know where that came from. That was beautiful. All right.
All right. Well, I mean, so what do we score this for, Torilo's presence?
I don't know. Let's say like a zero. I mean, because this was...
Yeah.
This was chaotically terrible, but not in like an eldritch horror way. Not like in an unknown way. These were known terrors
just
thrown
classic
together.
Classic bonehead author stuff. And I feel like that's the best way to describe Rita is boneheaded.
I'll have to read some excerpts of stuff about her after we're done with this. All right. All right, so should this exist, Chris? First subsection of this is, would readers of this genre enjoy this?
I don't think so. Even if you really like schlocky sci-fi, this is scraping the bottom of the barrel so much that you've gone through the bottom of the barrel and now you're just scraping against the dirt, hoping to get a taste of anything that was once in the barrel.
You're like, oh, no, that's my floor. God damn it. Now I've scratched the floor. I feel like the only person who would like this is somebody who is like, yeah, I want to fuck a space teenager, which is terrible. And I don't know. I'm sure that exists.
Even then, there's probably better stuff out there to appease that.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that this would be a great read for even diehard sci-fi nerds. Do we feel as if the author's goal was met? I mean, I'm sure she felt like she met her goal.
Right, like it was a screed against space hippies and the dangers of establishing a commune that isn't based around industrial warfare society.
Yes. I'm sure she felt like she met her goal.
Even then, I don't think I felt like she met her goal, so I'm going to say no on this.
Okay. Does it add anything new, interesting, or novel?
No. This is as tropey as it gets.
Yep. I mean, and like fiction to serve the interests of, you know, anti-communism isn't like a brand new thing. And it wasn't very well hidden. So I don't think even that's new. Did it take something from us? Oh, yes. God.
Yes. I felt very bad reading this, both physically and then mentally, because of how I had to spend my mental energy. What little mental energy I had some of those days, just sitting in a chair in my room going like, I have to fucking finish this. Oh, God. Dorian, are you just going to drool over Tina for the next 50 pages? Which is indeed what happens for a good section of the book.
You know what, Chris? I think we figured out where Terriblo was. That's where he was in the timing of this. Terriblo was like, this one isn't, it's bad, it's not the worst thing they've ever read, but what if I make Chris read it while he has a fever for a week? that's what happened.
There he is. He always knows just how to turn the screws a little bit. You thought you knew the depths that I could bring you to, but no, there's still another way.
Sometimes I wish... as a visual medium, because I'm just doing the tentacle chair dance into the video camera.
Yeah, that one,
Chris.
The one that everyone knows.
Yes, of course, the classic. This was only 156 pages. It was extremely short. Dude, this took me like a week to finish. I just like, I would read 5 or 10 pages and be like, oh, I can't. Like, I tried.
I was
so
excited
hard
for how short it was, but it didn't feel
me
that
too.
Short.
No, it didn't. Like, how the fuck do you do so badly that you make a 156-page book feel like it's 400 pages? How did that happen? That was Terriblo's touch.
There you go.
That's what it was.
Him. Oh, okay.
Can we fix it? No.
We got to score the rubric here.
Oh, right. You're keeping track.
Ahead.
I forget.
I know you want this to end much like you wanted the book to end, but still.
I'm just hungry. I'm just hungry. Same. I only had a protein shake today.
Well, you know, if you lived where the melons drop, perhaps that wouldn't be a problem. Anyway, technical construction was 1. Plot and characters was -1. Prose and dialogue was -1. Terrible's presence was 0. Should this exist was -1. So overall, -2.
Hmm. All right. Okay.
Apparently not scored as bad as some other things we've done, but still pretty down there. All right. Now can we fix it, Paris?
Hmm.
I don't think so.
This would require an entire... No, I mean, it would just... The entire thing would have to be changed. I mean, the characters would have to be completely rewritten. Even the general story, even again, like the number two pencil sketch here, the first draft on a post-it note is just boring. Like, I don't care about this. Oh, no, he crash lands on a planet. Oh, no, there's an enemy. Oh, there's... They have to get away. Like, who fucking cares?
Of like a fourth grader that turned this in as like the story sure. that I want to write. And I'd be like, great, awesome, let's give it a try. But like anything else.
Yeah, if this is like your first, yeah, like it'd be one thing if this was like a young person's, you know, it's kind of like that, what was that like thief based story we read? Moonlight.
The Long Razor Moonlight. Light.
Thank you. Like, that was an example of this was clearly, like, a first attempt at something, had all the basic elements there. Guy didn't even really want to publish it, but someone was like, hey, we'll give you money for this. And he was like, ah, fine. Like, that was, to me, is, like, the only acceptable version of that kind of a thing. Whereas, I mean, and that had its fucking problems. Actually, a lot of similar problems to this. Weirdly enough. Strange. I just realized that. But this was, like... An adult woman in the late 60s, early 70s being like, I'm going to become a sci-fi author to dismantle communism. And I just feel like you got to work a little harder. That's kind of your deal. Yeah, this would require I think this is just right. Boop, right in the dumpster.
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly. Okay, well, thank you to Beast with the Least, especially... For this one, since there's a lot of Drek out there in this area, and to pick through it all and select something like this for us to read is a feat worthy of praise, I suppose. I don't know how
this is like. This is like when it's like when a restaurant you've gone to a lot that's like kind of mid. It's fine. Like, you just go because it's like cheap and available, and then they have a new appetizer, and you're like, interesting.
Yeah,
I just feel like.
Oh, they put jalapeno poppers.
It's the poppers. Baja Blast pie.
Yeah, that's
it's
what
the Baja
it is.
Blast pie. That's what
we
this is.
That out. Thanks, Beast with the Least, for this Baja Blast cream pie up in us.
Thank you. Before we thank the rest of the patrons, though, I did want to just talk about Rena Vale a little bit because, again, this is abnormal for the show. We don't usually do much reading into the author, but I started to get that whiff, and it was irresistible. I had to look it up. And because I was like, is this a pen name, or was this actually a woman named Rena Vale who wrote this? And yes, she actually wrote under her real name. There is something I read portions of that I thought was really good. This is just Sacramento State. Most universities, you can read theses for free. And Sacramento State has a thesis from 2010. Christopher Robert Deutsch, you wrote this for your master's degree. And thank you, because it was really helpful to me in understanding Rena Vale.
Finally, the master's degree came through in the specific scenario for this one random person
thank
doing
you.
A podcast.
You know, 14 years after it was written. So I'm going to read his abstract because I think it does enough to give you kind of her whole deal. All right. Deutsch's abstract reads, this thesis offers an analysis of the life of Rena Marie Vale, 1898 to 1983, a professional anti-communist crusader who likely shaped the agenda, if not the personality, of the California Un-American Activities Committee, QAC, in the 1960s. Topics explored herein include anti-communism through the lens of gender, the role of professional women in the anti-communist jihad, the use of science fiction to expose the mortal danger of communism to America, and the response of QAC to those who defied the House Committee on Un-American Activities, HUAC, the anti-war peaceniks, the proponents of the Civil Rights Crusade, and the advocates of the free speech movement. A number of historians have addressed women as targets of anti-communist inquisitions, but few have ever mentioned those women who operated as the inquisitors themselves. The pick-me queens, that is me, ad-libbing. Though generally unknown to scholars, Vale toiled behind the curtain as a Red Hunter deluxe, framing the questions for the investigative committee as well as supplying the inculpatory evidence needed to indict individuals summoned to prove their Americanism.
For instance, as the committee's main conduit of information on the seismic events occurring in California in the 1960s, she likely influenced the views of Hugh Burns and Richard Coombs by giving them the fodder to brand the free speech movement a communist plot. This thesis draws primarily from the records of the California and Un-American Activities Committee, housed at the California State Archives, particularly the valuable index card file dating from 1954 to 1968, the Bay Area reports and the office files, which explain why Vail created the aforementioned cards, and Vail's own testimony before QAC and HUAC. Insight into Vail's mindset can best be gleaned from her memoir and her three science fiction novels. Other primary sources that undergird my essay include interviews, newspaper reports, and correspondence. Finally, secondary accounts have also informed my analysis. Specifically, I've especially relied on the works of Edward Barrett Jr., David Kaut, John Haynes, Michael Heal, Richard Hofstadter, Lisa McGurr, Catherine Olmsted, William Rohrbach, Catherine Rimpf, Ingrid Scobie, Ellen Trecker, and Kate Wiegand. The thesis concludes that Vail not only experienced professional success as a diligent pursuer of communists, but likely her vital role as a female Torquemada conferred enormous personal satisfaction after having been spurned by chauvinistic males in the studio system and even in the Communist Party itself. It also recognizes the success of Vail's futuristic fiction, both as an exemplar of Cold War hysteria and for her Cassandra-like efforts to fan chimerical fears of thermonuclear war and the Soviet subjugation of the United States. Great thesis. I didn't read all of it. I read parts of it. But if you want to understand more about Rena Vail, I just wanted to read that because I was really impressed with how well-researched the thesis was. So thanks, random dude. I know you're not expecting to ever hear this, but hey, your thesis did a thing. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for that, you can also, hard work.
You know, you can also read Rena Vail's Wikipedia. It's pretty short, but it doesn't go into the detail that the thesis goes into, even in the abstract, where we find out that she was actually the fucking architect of the "Are you American enough?" questions. God damn it. What a piece of shit.
So a lot more academic rigor happening in that abstract alone than Dorian taking a photo of a nude girl and going, "Laundry chute's broken.
LOL, gonna jerk off to this later." Once again, the evils are capitalism and misogyny, because without misogyny, she wouldn't have been pushed to become a communist hunter.
Perhaps the greatest snitch ever. One of the top snitches that there ever was.
Yeah, high-grade snitch. Dude, she snitched on Steinbeck. What the fuck? Lucille Ball and Steinbeck. Goddamn.
Unparalleled snitchery.
Fascinating backstory, Beast of the Least. I knew nothing about Rena Vail, so I appreciate that you, I don't know. I don't think you even told us this. I just sort of sniffed it on my own. It was very interesting. So
they're probably relying on your senses to be able to do that. They like Paris will check that shit out. I know.
She'll figure it out. Or maybe he did tell us and I just forgot. That's also possible. But anyway, thank you. This was a fascinating trip down anti-communist sci-fi lane today.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Beast with the Least, and thank you to the rest of our patrons, like our bad bookworms, Emily, Ben, Renee, Scott H., Donnie, Anya, Lycoris, Jakob, Jared, and Will. Our exacting editors, Rudy Bobooty, The Ugly One, Emmy, Harry Seven, Funny Robot with Antennas, David, Martin, S., Kieran, D., and Greg. The Loathsome Librarians, Yonka of the Void, the Talking Unicorn, Robin, Austin, Patricia, Beast with the Least, Veronica, Lucek, Senia, and Arant, our pesky publishers, Julius the Nice Dragon, and Miles May, our ever faithful Kiwi Thing over at Ko-fi, and Martin F. and Brenner also at Ko-fi, who helped relieve us of some terrible books. If you want some terrible books we've read for the show, including this one, a physical copy is available, so if you really want to see that cover in person, you can purchase it on our Ko-fi page. Will anyone accept our challenge to become an arch-archivist this year? What heinous, monstrous tome will you force us to read that is far more pages than 156? If you're going to do that, you're going to have to cough up a little bit more scratch.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you, Chris. Thank you, patrons. Beast of the Least, another excellent recommendation. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you get Baja Blasted or whatever.
Yeah, I'm off to find the Baja Blast melon for you on Taurus 7, to Taco 7.
Taco 7.
On Bell 9 is where I'll be.
I want to go to Bell 9. Now I think I'm going to end up ordering takeout nachos, aren't I? It's going to happen.
That sounds lovely.
Thank you.
God, I really want nachos now. God damn it.
That's how it always ends.
Bell's got its grip on me. It's the last two episodes. You just hear me talking about it.
All right. Oh, see you at the bell, okay. Paris.
Away to the bell.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Terrible Book Club. Terrible Book Club is an independent podcast produced by your hosts, Paris and Chris. Sound design and audio editing by Chris, with sound effects and music by Epidemic Sound and sometimes also Chris. Our theme song is Kiss by Yearn, which is, you guessed it, actually, also Chris. You can find more of his soothing synthy sounds on Bandcamp at yearn.bandcamp.com. Do you want us to review a book of your choice on the show? Do you want access to some extra audiovisual weirdness? If so, become a patron at patreon.com/terriblebookclub. If you'd like to send us a one-time tip instead, you can do that at ko-fi.com/terriblebookclub. You can also support TBC for free by sharing the show on social media, following our accounts on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Goodreads, telling your friends about your favorite episode, or by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or anywhere else on the internet. To send us book recommendations or your adorable pet photos, send an email to terriblebookclub@gmail.com.
This thesis, the Baja Blast pie is hitting.